This episode of the Start Time Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/paranormal. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Wednesday with Bran and Dave. Here we go.
Hey, Bran.
Hey, buddy.
I was just thinking about waterfalls. What are you thinking about?
Oh, man. Come on, dude. That's messed up. Dave, you know that I have to go to the bathroom.
I know, but I think that it's the most fun way for us to record this podcast is when we're like really like challenging ourselves.
Dave, it's Wednesday, and that means it's interview day, and that means it's our favorite day of the week.
Right.
And not that we don't like the news. I'd hate for people to get that impression.
No.
We love it.
We love it. Right. We love it. We said it at the same time, so that means it's true.
Right.
Hang on, Brent. I got to get a sip of water from this water fountain.
Oh, my gosh. Like, what makes you decide, am I going to be the biggest jerk in the world today? Sure.
Oh, sorry, Brent. It's raining outside, and I couldn't hear you.
Is it really raining?
No.
Okay. Well, so you're a liar more than anything.
April Fools, Brandon. Nope.
Again, that's not what April Fools is.
It's still April.
April showers bring May flowers.
Ooh, are we on the way to May?
March Madness is the sadness.
Are you excited about the interview today, Brandon?
Oh, I could not be more excited. We've been trying to get Dr. David Jacobs on the show for a while now. Things fell through on our end, and then things finally worked out, and we were able to talk to him today. And we're really excited about it. He's a really smart dude. He's talking about aliens in a way that we never have talked about them before. So I'm excited to dive into that.
Absolutely. Dive into it like at the pool, Brian.
Dave, like as yeah. if.
Yeah, come on over.
I don't like even a little bit of you.
Oh, come on, Brian. Sometimes you just need to sit down, relax, and just, you know, take a big old gulp.
Have you ever wanted to file your taxes, but you can't?
No, because I never want to file my taxes.
Right. Have you ever? It is tax day is coming right up, Dave. Are you getting a little bit nervous? I know you haven't done them yet.
No, I feel like I'm on a slip and slide right now. It's like getting really close. It's like right on there.
Dave, I don't even want to banter with you anymore. Let's go to a quick break, and then we'll come back with our interview.
Okay. Do you hear that? Is that the sprinklers on?
Hey, Dave.
Yep.
Do you like books?
Oh, boy. I love to just sit on the toilet and read one.
Okay. Do you like fiction?
What kind of fiction?
Science fiction.
My favorite kind. You nailed me.
Okay. Well, have you ever thought about maybe listening to a science fiction book?
That sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
Listening to it?
Yeah.
So just listening so you don't even have to use your eyes?
Don't you have to? You could fall asleep to a science fiction book every night.
Boy.
Let me tell you how. Can I?
You could even be in the shower. Hour and listen to one.
Absolutely, if that's what you're into. This is all you got to do, Dave. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You got to go to audibletrial.com/paranormal. Audibletrial.com/paranormal. You're going to sign up, and here's what we're going to do for you. In signing up, we're going to give you a free one-month trial to Audible. Audible is a website that has over 180,000 audiobooks for you, including an amazing selection of sci-fi. And you're going to go on there and you're going to get one free audiobook, whatever book you want. And it's completely on us at the start time. So you don't have to pay for it.
For me.
You don't have to just pay for it. You don't have to do anything. You just sign up for your free trial. You get the book and that's it. And in doing that, Dave, people are actually going to be helping us out. So we continue to push out great content like this every day of every week.
Fantastic.
By great content, I mean, it's, you know, content.
Oh.
Like, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, Dave, audibletrial.com/paranormal. That's all you need to do to get your own free sci-fi audiobook at this very moment today after you listen to the show.
That sounds like a great thing, Brian.
Let's get back to
it. Drink it up.
Let's get back to the show. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, let's get, come over this way. This way.
Come on over here, the show.
Come here.
All right, we are back here on the Start Time Podcast. Dave, happy day to you.
Yes, sir.
How are you feeling? Happy day. It is interview day, and I know this is your favorite day of the week. How are you feeling, scale of 1 to 10?
1 to 10? I like to leave 8 with a little mystery because I don't know how things – we had some trouble getting it going, but now that we're in, I feel good about it.
Absolutely. I feel like this one's not going to let us down. This is, I think it's going to be a 10 by the end of it because tonight we have Dr. David Jacobs, who's just a brilliant – mind in this in what we're going to talk about tonight. He is a retired professor at the history of Temple University in Philadelphia. He's also been a UFO researcher since 1966, which is just impressive. He's written things, written a lot of articles, written conference papers for MUFON. He's written multiple books, including the one we're going to dive into tonight, which is Walking Among Us, which is about the processes and bureaucracy involved in the placing of hybrids into human society with the help of abductees. Dr. David Jacobs, welcome to the Star Time Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's good to finally have you with everything working and being on the same page and all that. It's very good to have you finally on the Star Time.
Yes, sir.
Let's just dive into this. Give us a little bit of background on your end. About exactly how you got interested in UFOs and abductions and when all that started.
Well, I got interested in UFOs in 1965. By 1966, I was basically a UFO researcher of sorts. And I in graduate school at the University of Wisconsin, became involved with the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization and the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and I began to do investigations of UFO sightings in and around Madison, Wisconsin. And it just sort of grew from that, and eventually I wound up writing my doctoral dissertation on the controversy over unidentified flying objects in America. And I stayed with it after I got my PhD in 1973, And I kept on. And then I had no interest in the abduction phenomenon at all until 1982 when I met the famed abduction researcher, Bud Hopkins.
Yeah.
And Hopkins showed me what he was doing. Hopkins lived in New York, and I'm down here in Philadelphia. So it turned out we were vacationing in the exact same small town in Cape Cod, Wellfleet, where he owned a house, but my wife and I were just vacationing there for a while. So we met him there, and he introduced us to some abductees who I'd never met before. I was never big on the abduction phenomenon before I met him. And 4 years later, this is 1982, 4 years later, I started doing abduction hypnosis after sitting at his side for years, talking with abductees, listening to his inductions and copying every word he said down and all the rest of that. So in 86, I started doing my own research, and I'm still at it at the ripe old age of 73.
Now, when you say that you weren't interested or weren't into abductions, does that mean that you didn't believe in them or you were just unsure about exactly what was going on there? Like, I know you're interested in UFOs, but sometimes that doesn't necessarily mean that you believe in aliens as much as you believe that there's something going on out there. So where were you when you mean that you weren't into it?
Well, I had read some early books on the abduction phenomenon, Barney and Betty Hill's story, you know, Interrupted Journey, as it was called. And Ray Fowler's The Andreasen Affair and whatever else was available. And I couldn't get the idea out of my mind that this still could be psychological, that there could be some sort of psychological event that was taking place here.
Sure.
And just a few cases does not a phenomenon make, you know what I mean? You have to go for how many, you know, once you start seeing that there's a lot of cases, then that's a whole different story. So I actually was at a conference in 1981 where Bud Hopkins presented a paper about abductions. It would be the first paper about abductions to this group and one of the first ever done. And I sat in that room thinking, should I sit here and waste an hour of my life, or should I go out on the hallway with my friend Marcello Truzzi, who was a professor every joke ever made by every human on Earth since the beginning of time.
Oh, man.
I went out on the hallway and laughed for an hour. Mm. I knew what was important and until Hopkins was done. And so I never heard that paper. A year later, a friend of mine named Tracy Torme, who's a Hollywood producer and writer, and who is a son of Mel Torme, the famous singer from the 1940s and 50s, he asked me to come up to New York City where he was visiting because he knew something about the conspiracy theory about UFOs and why the government was hiding the office that was handling the conspiracy. So I went up to New York City and he told me where it was, which made no sense to me, but who knows. And then he said, let's go see my friend Bud Hopkins. And I said, no, Tracy, I don't think so. I'm not interested. You know, I don't want to go and do that. And he said, no, come on, come on. He's a nice guy. I like him. And I said, no, I got better things to do. I got places to go, things to do, all that. Mm-hmm. He said, come on. I got a cab right here. Let's go. We'll see him. You'll like him. Okay. So he takes me down to 16th Street and 8th Avenue. And he'd forgotten where Bud Hopkins' address was, what Bud Hopkins. Hopkins' address was, so we had to go through and start looking on doorbells to see if the name Hopkins was underneath one. Huh. And we found it.
Boy.
We found it, and out comes Bud Hopkins, and we go into his house there, and the first thing I noticed was that he had fantastic, mind-boggling art on his walls. I did not know he was an artist, and he was unbelievably good. At the same time, he also had art from his pals, like Franz Klein, who had been his best friend, and all these other famous people I knew from the New York School of Art, as they called it, of which he was the youngest member. He also had a Renoir, a Degas, a Cezanne drawings on his wall that he had bought over the years, and it was really breathtaking. And he was unbelievably nice and kind and good. And so we stayed for about an hour. I was impressed, and he was extremely intelligent. And now it's time to leave. And this is where a coincidence came in that was really bizarre. He asked us where we're going this summer. And I said, he asked me where I'm going this summer. And I said, well, my wife and I just had a baby, and so we normally go up to Bar Harbor, Maine, but we're going to this little tiny house in Cape Cod called Wellfleet. We'd been there once before last year, you know. And he said, Wellfleet? He said, I own a house in Wellfleet. When you come up, look me up, we'll get together. So that's what we did, and Wellfleet is not a town that people have heard about. Most people outside of Cape Cod have never heard of Wellfleet. And it's this little town that's power-packed with intellectuals and artists. How's that for something odd? And he knew everybody. It was amazing, his circle of friends. And he introduced my wife Irene and I to them and this and that. And that began our association with Bud in 1982. that lasted until his death in 2011. And Bud and I became extremely close friends for all the rest of those years, and taught me virtually everything I started out with in doing abduction research.
Hmm. Wow. Two of the cities
that you've mentioned are actually close to me, because one, I live in Brooklyn and I work in New York City. And then also my friend, one of my best friends, is at Madison, going to school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. That's pretty cool.
And oddly enough, my grandparents are from Bar Harbor, Maine. So there you go.
Wow, we got it all in connections. But I'm curious. Yeah,
that is weird.
Yeah.
I will say one thing, though, that your brother is going to Madison, Wisconsin. We'll probably like it. We were there for 8 years, and we loved every minute we were there.
Oh, it's great. I've got to visit him one time. That place is so nice, man. It's just such a great area. And you said that was a pretty good spot where you had a lot of a chance to study a lot there, the UFO phenomenon.
It was the 60s. There was a riot every day.
Wow.
loved it.
Yeah.
And it was at Madison. There was a riot every day?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Madison was, when we first moved to Madison, we were told it was like a Berkeley, which was famous already in the early 60s for its upheavals and so forth, mm-hmm. that it was a Madison with snow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, and that turned out to be true. I'm sorry, it was a Berkeley with snow.
Right.
And that turned out to be true.
That's fantastic. What was the, you said that the location of the building surprised you in New York City, that it would be there. What was the location? Just out of curiosity.
He lived at 246 West or East 16th Street.
16th Street. That was where the building was that supposedly was the headquarters. The headquarters. Right.
Headquarters of what?
The headquarters. Remember, you said that you went to New York City in search of the headquarters for what was going on with all the research.
No, that was what Tracy told me in terms of the conspiracy. He knew
right.
the headquarters were in. And that's what he told me. It was the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey office. I said, oh, that's interesting. But I don't right. know if it's true or not. And I've heard a lot of different offices since then and what's directing the conspiracy.
Gotcha.
But I'm not a gotcha. Real big conspiracy guy.
Gotcha. I was just curious where the location was. But okay, I see what you're saying. So, now that once you got into the abduction part of it, like how many people did you work with, and what was that like beginning the research on your own?
Well, I started doing my own research in August of 1986, and since that time, I've worked with, I don't know, maybe 150. It used to be 150. It's probably about 160 people now. And I've looked at over 1,150 different abduction events with them, and I'm still doing it, although I'm tailing off. I'm getting old and I'm getting tired. You know, I spent a lifetime on virtually my entire adult life, except for a couple of years doing this kind of research. So. And I would prefer now just to sort of sit back and watch television. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Now,
but I have two more books to write.
What's that?
I was about to say, I have two more books to write. Once I write those books, I'll be done.
Gotcha. Well, we'll dive
in. I wish I could say that.
Yeah, I wish all we had to do was write a couple books and then we'd be good to go. That'd be a great right. thing to say. So you've worked with, over 100 abductees and have talked to them and heard their stories. But I don't believe you have been abducted.
Yeah, over 160.
Right. So you haven't been abducted yourself though, have you?
Nope. I've not been abducted and I've not seen what I would consider to be a legitimate UFO.
Sure. So what exactly makes an abductee? What are aliens looking for? What are some common denominators that you've seen in the people that you've talked to that make them susceptible to be abducted, or what they think is abductions?
Right. There is one common denominator, and that common denominator is that this is an intergenerational phenomenon. Therefore, their mother or their father or both were abductees beforehand and are still abductees if they're alive. And that means that the children that they have, with even just one person being an abductee, if they have two children or four children, all of the children, or three or whatever, all of the children will be abductees. And when those kids get married later on and they have kids, all of their kids will be abductees as well. And it goes through the generations right. like that. That is basically, it's not ironclad, because every once in a while, somebody who will be abducted who, for example, is in a car with an abductee, and the abductee is the target. They'll take up the entire car, and technically speaking, the person who is now asleep in the car has been abducted, but the non-abductee, but that will not continue with
okay.
that person. But these are the finer details of it.
Yeah. So how far have you traced how far back that goes, like generationally? So my dad gets abducted, his dad gets abducted. Eventually, something's going to happen to where that dad's not going to be abducted. So how far back does that go generationally? Have you figured that out?
Yeah. Good question. Thank you. It's difficult to tell. We can trace it back through family history to the last quarter of the 19th century. But that's with not a real high degree of confidence, but yet there is confidence in it.
Okay.
We can trace it back with a greater amount of confidence to 1917 from a letter I read from that was an obvious abduction written to the Aerial Phenomena Research Society organization. In the 1960s, when the guy was an older person, and he was 11 years old in 1917.
Okay.
Then Bud Hopkins did a session with a guy who remembered his abduction event happening in 1922. And I did work with two women who were abductees and who were kids in the 1930s and remembered their abduction events then. So it's an increasing amount of confidence that we have as we get closer to now, obviously.
Right.
But we can, I think, right. with a degree of certainty, date it back to at least the first quarter of the 20th century, and maybe even earlier.
Yeah. Okay. So in looking at that, do you have any theories or have you done any research on exactly what happened around that time that caused aliens to begin abducting people? Is there any theories about why they began to do that then rather than waiting or doing it before then?
No, we have no knowledge of that whatsoever. The only knowledge we have is what's been going on in recent decades.
Okay.
And by that same token, is there any thing that you've noticed as a similarity between which families are selected as to, like, you know what I mean? Besides the fact that they're all abducted, is there any like pattern that you can see that would maybe seem like that the aliens picked the lineage for a specific reason?
Well, the vast majority of people do not know that they're abductees. And when they get married at random to whoever they love. And we know that the vast majority of Americans or Pakistanis or Europeans, if I may be general, do not know that they're abductees, and they just get married to people, 95% of whom, I should have said, are not abductees. So when they get married, the chance of getting married to an abductee is one abductee getting married to another abductee is low. It does happen from time to time, but it's low. And so most people get married to non-abductees, and then all their kids will be abductees.
Okay.
And then they get married to non-abductees, and then all their kids will be abductees. Now, there's gotcha. A reason for that. There's a reason for that.
And what's that?
When I was born, there were 2.4 or 2.3 billion human beings on Earth.
Right.
Now, there's like 7.3 billion people.
Isn't that crazy?
Right. That means that there's been an enormous expansion in the population. But that expansion is kept, it has kept the number of abductees basically the same because it grows with the population. In other words, their kids will marry non-abductees and expand the population with their kids, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, the abduction phenomenon and the UFO phenomenon grows with the population, my guess is. Right. And that keeps everything sort of on an equal basis, I guess. But the fact is that they would also, therefore, need more UFOs built, so to speak. I don't know how they create UFOs, but they would need more UFOs and more aliens to be in them to take care of the population growth, unless they decide to just stay with what they have and just abduct people in large numbers over and over and over again in much faster, speedier ways. It's got to be one of the two. My guess is that it's more UFOs, actually.
Okay.
Now, where those UFOs come from and how they get them, I do not know. That is an unknown. But my guess is that there are more UFOs now than there ever were because of the expanding population.
Right.
Interesting.
Which begs the question, like, why do they want to maintain a certain percentage? Like, what is there some kind of controlling factor that they need to have a certain percentage of the population in order to, like, maintain something? Do you guess, or is that kind of an unknown?
Well, it's an unknown, but at the same time, the abduction phenomenon is, well, there, as I always say, with interviews, there are three pillars to the abduction phenomenon. Number one, it's a global phenomenon around the world. Number two, it is intergenerational. And number three, it is clandestine. It is secret. Therefore, the secrecy aspect of it boils down to basically one concept. And the concept is they don't want us to know what they're doing. So everything is secret. Everything is clandestine. Most people don't know that they are abductees themselves, even though they might have been abducted God knows how many times. And it's not a one-shot deal, in other words. And how they operate and what they do is still a mystery in terms of the backstory. In other words, we know what they do to abductees, but we don't know what they do when they're alone, obviously. We don't know how they, what orders they're taking or giving. We don't know what their mindset is, although we've learned somewhat about it. We don't know a whole bunch of how these beings see us and what their plans are for the future. But we know enough to make very, very, very educated guesses now. So how they are expanding, we don't know. Why they're expanding, how they get UFOs, more people, more beings, all that, we don't really know. Yet at the same time, we do know that people are abducted over and over and over and over again throughout the course of their lives. They tend to think that the odd things that are happening in their life are just normal. They think that everybody goes through these types of bizarre events. Not that they're being abducted. They don't remember that. But that there's odd disassociations in time. In other words, it's they're driving home and it's 6 o'clock at night. And then suddenly it's 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. And then they get home and they think, gee, I must have pulled up to the side of the road and fallen asleep or something. Or they'll make up some sort of excuse, but basically they don't even think about it. Or they wake up in the morning and their clothes are on backwards, their pajamas, let's just say. And they think, gee, that's weird. I thought I put my pajamas on correctly last night, but I guess I didn't. And these things just are just kind of normal for them. They think it's just typical. One time a graduate student was in the came into my office. And I told her that I didn't know she was interested in UFOs. I'd heard her talking about it. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, have you ever seen a UFO? And she said, oh, yeah. She said when she was about 6 years old, she got on a bed and for some reason or other in the middle of the night. Now, six-year-olds don't usually wake up in the middle of the night unless they're sick or something. Mm-hmm. And said and looked out the window. And when she saw a UFO that had landed in her backyard or side yard or something like that. And she saw these little people standing around it. And just as she was looking at that, her mother came bursting into the room and said, hide, they're going to get us, hide. And that's the last thing she remembered.
Huh.
And I said to her, well, what did you think of this? And she said, whoa, nothing. That's just the way the life is. And she always just chucked it up to that's life. You know, that's what happens.
That's life.
Right. And I wasn't about to burst her bubble or anything like that. I said, well, okay, you know, and that was that. But she just chalked it up to normal life.
Yeah. So at what point, I mean, we've obviously been able to trace generationally that it's connected, that my father was abducted, his father was abducted. But if they don't know that they were abducted, how are we able to make those connections? Is it through hypnosis, or is there a revelation at one point that, oh, I guess I was abducted? Like, how are we able to make those connections generationally?
We can't.
Okay.
All we can see is the people who have bleed through memories and realize this is not normal and natural, and who think of aliens that they've seen on television, and the aliens scare them to death when they watch the television show, and they know that they're reacting in a wildly improper way. And yet, they might be shaken to their very core, and they might have dreams about aliens and that they remember. And those are the people who come forward, who want to find out what has been happening with them since they were children.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember also that this is a clandestine phenomenon, and because the way in which you kick off the secrecy, obviously, is by keeping it from the people who you are abducting. And it is an extraordinarily successful program. So we see the ones on the fringes whose mind remembers things a little bit better than most other people. Not a whole lot. The people who I see are desperate to find out what's going on with them, and it's ruining their lives and their... They live in fear, and they stay up all night long with a gun in their hand in case anybody comes through the window. And that is a truthful phenomenon.
Sure.
And and they know that it's happening, and they want to. It's ruining their lives, and because of they're constantly thinking about it, and all of that, and they come to me because they're desperate, and those are the people who I tend to see. Whereas a lot of other people, like this woman who's speaking to me in my office, I just think it's natural and normal, and I'm not going to ask her to look into these kinds of memories because I'm not in the life ruining business. You know, I don't like to destroy people's lives. They have to come to me and want it done, and they know something is going on. They want to find out what it is.
Right. Well, last question, just relating to that before we dive into Walking Among Us, which I'm really excited to talk about. In relating to that, do you see any connections between the people who do have memories leaking through that you're kind of able to – that? Do you see any connections between the people who are freaked out by the memories that are leaking through and the people that are not? Are they – Have the people whose memories have leaked through and it freaks them out been, probed differently or experimented on differently through some of those memories than the ones who don't have awful memories, if that makes sense?
Well, it does. My guess is is that everybody has the same experiences. It does not matter whether they have bleed through memories or not. Everybody has the same experiences. If there wasn't a pattern, if people didn't have the same experiences, we would not be talking to each other right now, because it would be obviously psychological. But in fact, everybody around the world, because this is a global phenomenon, around the world say the same thing. There has never been anything like this in human history. Because when I say people around the world, without knowing each other, will say the same things and recite the same investigation of them, so to speak. Well, they talk about being taken on board, the clothes removed, taken on a table, have all sorts of different events happen to them on a table, taken off the table. All the tables are the same. They're unusual tables. They're unusual rooms. They're unusual UFOs. They all describe the same things, essentially. They are then taken into other rooms where they have to hold babies, teach young children who look sort of like crosses between humans and aliens, hybrids as we call them. And in other words, it goes on and on and on what they have to do. Everybody says the same thing. It's astonishing. Yeah. Like I said, there has never been anything like this in history. Never. This is extraordinary. I've worked with people from Europe, from Latin America, from Asia, and obviously from Canada, and they all say the same thing. There's never been anything like this before.
Yeah. So just kind of going off that hybrid thing, let's transition to Walking Among Us. What made you want to write this book about hybrids who you believe are, you know, walking among us, as the title speaks to?
Well, hybrids are, we've known about hybrids since mid-1980s, when Bud Hopkins discovered this phenomenon and called them hybrids. And he coined the phrase for this. I mean, obviously the word hybrid has been used in a lot of different ways, but he coined the phrase for the word for this phenomenon. He told me once that he called me up very excited, and he said, "David," he said, "I got this case with this woman who I knew, and they brought her into a room, and there was an alien who was holding a baby." And I said, "A baby? What do you mean a baby?" Because nobody had ever said that in human history before. And he said, "Yeah, it was a baby, a weird looking baby, sort of like a cross between human and alien." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, it was a cross between human and alien." I said, "A cross? It was so astonishing." And they wanted the abductee to hold the baby. And I said, "Hold the baby." I mean, everything he was telling me made no sense whatsoever. He said, yeah, they wanted her to hold the baby. And then I said, what else? He said, then they wanted her to feed the baby. I said, "Feed the baby? That's nuts. That's crazy. Did she tell them that she can't feed the baby? She wasn't lactating. She wasn't pregnant. She didn't have any other babies or anything like that. She couldn't do it." He said, "Yes, she said that she can't do it, but they forced her to put the baby up to her breast anyway and feed the baby." And I thought to myself, if this is true, we will never understand the alien mind, because in some way they value form over function. The form is to put the baby to the woman's breast, but there is no function. There's no milk. So I said, we can't understand intelligence like that. It makes no sense. Oh, I was wrong, obviously. She was already lactating, as it turns out. We learned years later, when we had hundreds of cases like this, and hundreds of events like this, I should say. And they've stimulated lactation. Everything is logical. There's nothing illogical about them whatsoever. They're rigorously and rigidly logical and also intelligent.
Oh, man. So this is obviously pointing to the fact that there's some kind of...
What we've seen is babies. We've seen them as young children. We've seen them as older children, 10, 11, 12. We've seen them as young adolescents. We've seen them as older adolescents. We've seen them as young adults, sort of middle-aged adults, and not as older adults. We don't know why. We do not know why. But there seems to be a cutoff point that's not related to the building of hybrids on Earth, but related to something else. We don't know. We do not know. That's a behind the scenes issue. We don't know whether they're, once they reach the age of 60, whether they're jettisoned into deep space or they can't live that long or they're put to work doing other things. We don't know that.
So do you guys have any hypothesis as to why they're starting to, like, I guess, cross over and create the hybrids with by mating with the humans or whatnot, and what the abductees have to do with that, if there's some kind of, like, connection there?
Right. Well, hybrids are actually more complex in terms of who they are. In other words, there are hybrids who I call early stage hybrids who look really like half, well, three quarters alien and one quarter human. And then there's middle stage who look half and half. And there's late stage who look quite human, but something is wrong. Their eyes are too big, maybe no facial or bodily hair or things like that. Then they have ones who look really quite human. And then they have what I call, to just differentiate, hybrids, combination human hybrid, hybrids who are destined to live here. Now, my favorite question in the world when I have done interviews, and I've done, by 1975, I had lost count of how many interviews and television and radio shows I've done. And so I've done hundreds and hundreds of them. And the types of aliens that we see now are ones who look quite human. And years ago, these gray aliens and others would say, soon there's going to be a change. A change is coming. Soon there'll be this change. Everybody's going to know his place. Everybody's going to be happy. There's going to be this change. So I would ask people, well, what do you mean by change? Do you know what the change means? Abductees would say, no, they don't. Now, I heard this enough times so that it was obviously being said to people as opposed to just a one-shot situation. And interestingly, if this phenomenon was psychological and not actually happening, but just a product of people's imaginations, then they would have known what the word change meant. At least some of them. We'd hear it once in a while, but nobody knew. So I said, well, do you know what the word soon means? Because who knows what time means to these beings? It could be that that means 10 days from now or 10,000 years from now, for all we know. So nobody knew what the word soon meant either. Now, this is in the 1990s when I was hearing this. Starting in 2003, I began to hear something different, something heard before. And hearing something different when you've done lots and lots and lots, hundreds and hundreds of abduction hypnosis sessions, essentially, then everything is just over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And by 2003, what I was doing primarily when I would do a session with somebody, my main focus was to stay awake, because I've heard the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Now, that's important because you're looking for patterns, and these are the patterns. But in 2003, I heard something different. Some guy said, after about our fourth session, that he just remembered, he said, that he has this friend that he sees from time to time. It's not only a friend, it's his best friend in all the world. And he's always seen him, as it turns out. And it's funny how he just remembered him, because it's his best friend. And he called him, and he's been to restaurants with Eric. He's been to foreign countries with Eric. He's been on fishing trips with Eric. He's been this everything with Eric. Eric is his best friend in all the world. It's funny how he totally forgot him. So we started doing sessions that related to Eric. And, Eric was person he knew, who didn't, he didn't know his last name, didn't know where he worked, didn't know if he was married or not, didn't know where he lived, didn't know what he did when he left the guy I was working with. But he was his best friend. So that Eric was a high who was learning how to be that is not evidence. That's just some guy spinning a tale. And you have to wait for people to say the same thing or close to it. Then another person began to talk about somebody who he or she was also friends with, but who was the abductee was helping this person to learn about life on Earth. Then another person said that, then another. Another person said that, then another one, then another one, then another one, and I thought, oh my God. The person who I worked with, even now, from time to time, since 1987, began saying that. And to my utter astonishment, and I realized this was something going on that was different than ever before. This was, at least I was hearing it as new. I don't know whether other abductees out there had been doing this for years beforehand. I don't know that. But it was certainly new for me. And so when people ask me the question, do you think they're walking among us? It was my favorite question, because I always got to say, absolutely not. There's no evidence whatsoever that they are walking among us. And I felt sane then. I felt good. I felt like I could say no. But after 2003, I couldn't say that anymore. Mm-hmm. 2004, 2005, whatever. I couldn't say that because I had to say, when people ask me, do you think they're living among us? Do you think they're walking among us? I had to say, well, I think there's the possibility. It could be. It's always, you know, people are saying yes. And now it's my least favorite question. I hate that question because I have to say yes.
Yeah, it's so funny.
But that's how the book title.
Yeah, I was listening to Art Bell one night, and he had this special line on his show called "I'm Married to an Alien," where people could call up and talk about how they're married to an alien. I remember thinking that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. But apparently, according to what you're saying, like, it's possible you could actually be really close to somebody who is a hybrid, as you like to call them, which is just really interesting. So why do you what do you think the point is? What are they? Are aliens planning something? What are they trying to do by sending hybrids here to Earth?
Well, the ones who are in charge are the insect-like ones. I call them insectolins, insect and alien, just put together and without the E.
Wow.
And they are the ones who know, who give orders, everybody else takes orders, and who know what this program is all about. They are not saying. They don't say it to hybrids. They tell it to abductees, and they don't, and as far as we know, they just keep that information to themselves. Therefore, we can only guess. Now, once again, if this were psychological, everybody would be coming up with a new idea that the aliens told them this and the aliens told them that. And that's not true. But the fact is, though, that we don't know. However, It is global, it's intergenerational, and it's clandestine. They don't want us to know what they're doing. Therefore, it can't be for our benefit. That is ruled out. Because if they were working for our benefit, we'd know it. They'd be happy. We'd be happy. The whole world, the whole universe would be happy. But that is not what the situation is. The secrecy, especially when hubrids come down to live here, they move into apartments at age late teens and early adults. Abductees help them do that. And everything has to be kept absolutely secret. Security goes right through the roof once they're here, as I've learned. And this is not an American phenomenon. This is global. Mm-hmm. So my guess is it's happening in other countries as well. And the only thing that I can think of that makes any sense for this entire abduction UFO phenomenon is what I call planetary acquisition. I think this is a slow takeover of the planet in ways that we do not fully know yet. But it is the only thing that makes any sense to me, and that's just speculation. That's a guess.
It's really encouraging.
Yeah, that's I'm very hopeful.
Oh, geez. I mean, that takes the Walking Among Us to a terrifying level. Rather than a spooky, it's like kind of, I don't know, invading, invasive.
The evidence seems to point in that direction, and I can't get away from it. I would rather have this be a wonderful, beneficial phenomenon. They're here to heal us and heal the earth and make everything just wonderful for us and all that. But the evidence simply isn't there for that. And if people were told that, I would have heard it. But it's not told that. So when these beings said, soon there's going to be a change, soon everybody's going to know his place, soon everybody will be happy, I think they're talking about themselves.
Interesting. That's crazy. We gotta wrap it up due to time, but I would love for you to kind of, I don't know, as a skeptics podcast, a podcast of two guys who are trying to figure this out, we don't totally know what to believe in this regard. Is there anything that you see that you're like, maybe this isn't real? Like, I would love for you to say that there's a chance that this isn't real, cause that'd be really great. But obviously you've done years and years of research in this and you've obviously worked your way to this point. So is there any possible way that you could look back at us and say, yeah, you're right, this probably isn't real?
I wish there was. I pray that there was. The evidence is so overwhelming. It's not just from average people, it is from them, but it's from high-functioning people who are psychiatrists and psychologists and abductees themselves who come to my house to find out what's going on with them, and university professors and MDs, all of whom are abductees and scientists. The evidence is so overwhelming. I can't say no. I wish I could. I don't like this phenomenon. I don't like what I've been studying. I've learned to fear it. I don't want to be that way. I want it to go away. I want it not to be real. I desperately want it not to be real. And I can't do that as an academic. I have to go where the evidence leads me. And it leads me directly into the abduction phenomenon and its reality. Mm.
Very interesting. Tell us and tell our listeners where they can pick up your book, Walking Among Us, and also find out more about your work.
Well, it's on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Then go to my website, UFOabduction.com. That's abduction without an S, just singular, UFOabduction.com. And click through on the picture of it there if they want to go to Amazon.com. You know.
Right.
But it's an extraordinary. As I said, there's never been anything like this before. It's just mind-boggling.
Wow.
Absolutely. Dr. Jacobs, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a treat. I'm so glad we finally got it to work out. And thank you so much for sharing with us, and you have a wonderful night, all right?
Yes, thank you. It was very insightful.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a good one, all right? And that was Dr. David Jacobs. Man, Dave, that was something.
Wouldn't you say?
I would. I mean, I don't know if it was over on your end, but on our end, on the recording end, there was a little bit of sound problems here and there. So I hope that everything he was saying came through, because it was super interesting, really articulate.
Dang, I heard it all.
Okay, good. So that's happy. Must be on my end. I'll have to figure that out. But either way, I mean, we heard it, but it was just some ups and downs at times. But Dave, what are your thoughts? That was actually, for me, probably the most well thought out argument on the UFO phenomenon and the alien phenomenon that I've heard, and was actually really intriguing evidence for me to hear him talk through it.
You think that that you liked the one about like the kind of different species and stuff?
I like the different species, but for me, what did it for me with him is the fact that he, one, has never seen a UFO, and two, has never been abducted, obviously. So, like, he has no bias there. So he's purely doing it off of the conversations that he's had and the research that he's done. So for me, that is kind of cool, just to kind of hear him, like, this is purely based, 100% based off of interactions he's had with people and research that he's had. So for that reason, to me, he's a credible source.
Of course.
But what did you think? Did you think that what he said was worthwhile? Did it make you think anything that you haven't already thought?
Well, I think it was kind of a weird combination, because it was like, part of it was we don't really know anything, but then it was we also have some ideas, but then it seemed like the ideas they came to, he was pretty convinced about. So I don't know how much confidence to place him, since by his own words, they're kind of confused about it.
Sure.
And even down to like the main part at the end about it being that they're hostile versus friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's based upon the logic that he uses to completely determine whether this is like a symbiotic relationship versus where our lives are in stake is that the fact that they haven't told us.
Right.
I mean, that's like taking one thing that could have like a million different reasons why they aren't telling us, and then picking one specific reason and being like, that's probably the, right. Which I would say that if anything, it has as likely a chance as anything else, which puts it still at a very low likelihood.
Right. Like, I keep secrets all the time for the sake of surprise. Like, they're good things. It's a good surprise.
I mean, also, there's like, would you tell like an ant farm what's going on? I mean, if there's nothing going on, there's like, you're not going to take the time to explain, by the way, we're not going to harm you. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, it could be as simple as that, like that they're just kind of like doing their own thing. Yeah. Or, I mean, like, think about Star Trek. They're the whole purpose is that they're not allowed to, it's a secret. And yet the other main objective is to protect. So it's like those two things go hand in hand, being a secretive and protecting.
Yep, absolutely. No, that's a good point. But up to that point, I thought it was all really good and
interesting. Right. I think that the evidence and stuff was interesting. I think that some of the conclusions, I'm not sure as I'm as convinced about this.
Yeah. Hybrids, man. Do you think you ever seen one?
Brent, I wasn't gonna say it, but I was kind of thinking you were one of them.
Oh man.
Remember when he talked, I was thinking the stage right below Hubert, though, where he says that there's like a couple things, like really big nose or whatever it is, things like that.
Really hairy.
And that's kind of what made me
awkward.
Right. That's the thing that I was thinking about you at that point.
Right. No, I think that's probably pretty accurate. But I think about you and the fact that maybe you're not always who you say you are.
Oh,
like maybe,
really?
Maybe you're one.
What's the evidence there? What do I ever tell
you
a
don't
secret?
Always use the best English. Like, sometimes your sentences aren't, like, you know how he said they didn't understand soon and stuff like that. Like, you don't always use words in a way that a normal person would.
But is it that I don't understand them or that I say them? Because like those are two different ones.
Right.
Like,
no, but it could be. No. Well, it could be that you don't speak it correctly because you don't fully understand that, the English language.
I won't doubt that.
Well,
because I don't.
Yeah.
I don't understand it that well.
It's a dumb language. So
it's a language. I mean, it's hard for me. So I do my best with it. But I'll say that. Do you think that I'm like mysterious enough for it? Or do you think that I'm pretty boring? Like that there's no way in that regard.
I know. I don't think you're bored. I think you're, I think you're mysterious. What's up with this Dave?
You think
guy?
So?
Yeah. I kind of wonder.
That's what, really? Are you giving that to me?
Yeah. I'll give you mysterious.
Like what? Like maybe some of the mornings like Dave did like upper story time.
Right.
Like, well, what was I doing? You know?
Yeah, like I wonder today if I didn't FaceTime you to wake you up, would you have woken up? Like that's something I wonder.
Alien.
Yeah, alien. Hey, Dave, thanks for hanging out with me tonight, man.
Hey, bud. I'll see you next time.
It was a real big treat. We'll be back tomorrow for the Star Time News. Until then, have a great Wednesday.
Break a biscuit.